An apple a day, they say, keeps the doctor away. But could a poem, painting, or play have the same effect? Research into the effects of the arts on our health is growing rapidly. Lullabies can help premature babies gain weight. Magic tricks can improve hand function in children with partial paralysis. Singing can reduce symptoms of postnatal depression in new mothers. And dance music can help people with Parkinson's to walk. Over the last 30 years, hundreds of hospitals, hospices, and care homes around the UK have gone into partnership with artists and arts organisations to develop pioneering programmes putting this research into practice. But our NHS is changing. Where the focus was on treatment, it's increasingly on prevention. Does this still leave a role for the arts? Could something as simple as going to the theatre, joining a book club, or drawing in our own homes play a tangible role in reducing our risk of developing some of the most challenging health conditions facing us? If so, how do we harness this and use it to support the health of our nation? Let's take a moment to consider a condition that terrifies many of us. In 1995, the artist William Uitermolen was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And just over 5 years later, the disease was so advanced that he'd forgotten how to use his palette and brushes. But in the intervening years, he painted a series of self-portraits that give a haunting insight into the deterioration of the mind as it was ravaged by the disease. In the UK, one person every 3 minutes develops dementia. Worldwide, that's nearly 47 million people living with it. And as yet, there is no cure. But just delaying its onset by 5 years would halve the number of deaths from the condition. There's a wealth of research about the benefits of the arts for people with dementia. I've been lucky enough to see myself the work of organisations such as Live Music Now, who bring talented young musicians to bedsides, providing amazing moments of light in some of the darkest moments of people's lives. But new research is now suggesting that the arts could also help to prevent dementia. Everyday creative activities such as sewing and reading are associated with better cognition in older age. People who play a musical instrument have better memory preservation as they age. And just in the last few months, research I've been carrying out with colleagues at University College London has shown that engaging with culture, such as going to museums, galleries, the theatre or concerts at least once or twice a year, is also associated with a reduced rate of cognitive decline and a lower rate of dementia incidence. The more you engage, it seems, the greater the effect. Of course, a natural response to this is to ask, is it really the arts having this effect? Despite new programmes to improve access to culture, levels of participation in the arts are often linked with socioeconomic status. And socioeconomic status is also linked with health. So how do we deal with the fact that those who engage in the arts might just be wealthier, healthier, and less likely to develop dementia in the first place? Statistics can rescue us here. The models that are built to explore associations between cultural engagements and health outcomes contain dozens of factors that could confound these associations, such as socioeconomic status, education, health conditions, social networks, and other community engagements. By building these factors into our statistical models, we can try and isolate the relationships between the arts and health. Notably, the ties between activities such as going to museums and dementia onsets are robust even when we take account of all these factors, and they're evident across every strata within society. It appears that culture does not just benefit the most cultured. So how is it that the arts can have this effect? 2,000 years ago, explanations would have involved mysticism and magic. We have some fantastic accounts of the arts healing all manner of ailments from the ancient world, including venomous snake bites. But we have a much more scientific understanding now. Take, for example, going to a museum. The very act of engaging in anything that's cognitively stimulating is beneficial for cognitive function. It's quite literally a case of use it or lose it. But more specifically, going to a museum is known to enhance the brain's resistance to damage. We scientists call this protective effect cognitive reserve. Museums are particularly beneficial because they require close and slow observation, which leads to a powerful creative imagination response that strengthens brain function. This effect is the opposite of that gained from television viewing, where the fast-changing images have been associated with faster cognitive decline. Museums are also enjoyable, which increases brain dopamine levels, which are associated with improved brain flexibility. And museums also contain small doses of socializing and exercise, which are both protective against developing dementia. Consequently, visiting museums can be a vehicle to experiencing a range of cognitively beneficial mental, social, and physical activities. I've chosen to focus on dementia, but I could have chosen a number of other examples. How engagement with the arts at school can be protective against teenage mental health conditions. How dancing can help to maintain a healthy body weight. How singing can support lung function. And how reading for pleasure can help to prevent premature mortality. We have a rich cultural sector in the UK. 40,000 community choirs, 11,000 amateur orchestras, 5,000 amateur dramatic societies, 4,000 libraries, 3,000 dance groups, 2,500 museums, and 50,000 book clubs. Yet while we might engage with these activities for pleasure, I expect few of us engage for our health, in the same way we might have a vegetable smoothie or go for a walk. And I think the main reason is that people aren't aware of the volume of research about the arts and our health. This doesn't mean to say that people should only engage with the arts for health benefits. We can enjoy our smoothies and walks without explicitly trying to improve our health. But if the research were better known, people could draw on arts and cultural resources more as a way of actively trying to lead healthy lives. Fortunately, a new scheme is helping to do just this. Currently, about 20% of GP visits are made not for medical, but for social reasons, including loneliness and low-level mental health conditions. But in my work with GPs, many have explained that they're often not able to provide the type of support needed, especially within the confines of a 10-minute consultation. So these visits can leave individuals' issues unresolved and cost the NHS the equivalent of the salaries of 3,750 GPs per year. So there have been trials over the last few years where GPs direct people to community services that are better placed to provide support. This is called social prescribing, and one strand of this is providing the arts on prescription. Currently, about 400 general practices are taking part, with individuals referred to community choirs, book clubs, gardening groups, and museums to support their health. One of the patients I've worked with who went through this scheme is called Russell, and unsurprisingly, he said he was rather sceptical when he first received his arts prescription. He said to me that going to a painting class didn't seem like an effective way to him of solving his persistent depression and unemployment following a stroke. In his words, he thought it would be a room full of people hugging each other. But to try and break away from the cycles of ever-increasing medication he was on, he went along, and from the first session, he was hooked. Skip forward a few years, and Russell is now back in control of his own life. He's a professional artist with exhibitions all around the country, and he leads his own workshops for others with mental health conditions in his community. Russell is one of many who've benefited, and the NHS is now expanding social prescribing nationally. I realise this all sounds very positive. Rose-tinted glasses, you might be thinking. Naturally, there is an alternative way of viewing this. What I'm discussing could be seen as ominous, an instrumentalist way of reducing the arts to a mere tool for the achievement of government health targets. The denigration of art for art's sake, even damaging to the arts. Prescribing people's recreation could be seen as the ultimate nanny state approach, and claiming health benefits from cultural engagement could be seen merely as a way of grasping at straws to secure a place for the arts in a challenging funding climate. The reality is that for many health conditions, the arts are not appropriate tools. They can't magically heal, and we'd be unwise to exaggerate the benefits. But across much of history, the arts have been used for instrumental purposes, whether that was the carving of stone statues in the Paleolithic period for use in fertility rituals, the performance of Greek tragedies for moral education, or the opening of libraries in the 19th century in England to support public order. Prescribing the arts is not so much about forcing people to do something against their will, but about guiding them towards programs that could make them healthier. One of the beauties of many arts on prescription programs in the UK is that they're not a one-size-fits-all model, but actually offer people a choice, so they can find a program that truly fits them. If you're feeling depressed, joining a choir may well not be your cup of tea, but getting more involved with a community garden might suit you better. Diversity can be celebrated rather than squashed. As to the impact for artists creating work in this space, I recommend walking into the foyer of Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in London, where I used to work. Remarkably, it hosts over 1,000 pieces of art, including one of my favourites, Joy Gerard's installation of 450 silver steel spheres and rods that traverse a 5-storey, 30-metre space, mirroring the multi-layered complexity of the hospital. I had the pleasure of speaking with Joy about her work and asked her whether she felt this commission had stifled her freedom. But she said to me it was quite the opposite. It liberated it. She said the hospital was an interesting psychological space and an unusual canvas full of architectural jumble, which gave her the impetus to create the work. She also challenged the assumption that commissions for healthcare spaces are not art for art's sake. In her words, why shouldn't a hospital artwork be in a gallery space as well? Further, it's not a question of artists compromising their work to suit the healthcare system. Medicine is changing too. And these days, the emphasis is on developing an approach that's tailored to the individual, one where the voices of patients and the public help to shape the kind of care on offer. As for funding, the approach is not about spending lots of money on this scheme. Arts groups are already running in communities. So instead, it's about joining up existing services to provide better care, making more use of our great cultural institutions and broadening their reach. For the modest costs that are associated, every pound spent on this scheme has been found to save between £4 and £11 through reducing GP and hospital visits and medication prescriptions. Engaging with the arts doesn't guarantee a healthy life, but then nor does exercising or eating healthily. Sometimes factors such as strong genetic predispositions for certain conditions are, for now at least, broadly out of our control. But our health is like a crochet quilt. Some threads will weaken or snap whatever we do, but others we can tuck in or strengthen to ensure our quilt doesn't unravel. Arts Council England has the motto, Great Art for All, a sign perhaps that access to the arts is coming to be seen as a basic human right. I believe that removing barriers to the arts can help to remove social and health inequalities. And while, of course, the arts should not cease to be for art's sake or for other sakes, in my opinion, we'd be foolish not to make the most of their intrinsic benefits for health's sake too.